This week, Art of the Air celebrates our 6th anniversary and the start of our 7th season with an exclusive interview with Felix Cavallari of The Rascals, whose hit songs include Groovin' and A Beautiful Morning, plus his latest album Then and Now, plus his autobiography. Our spotlights an award-winning journalist and author Joseph S. Pete, sharing his newest book, Lost, East Chicago and Indiana Harbor.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews.
Greetings from Billy and Renee Foster.
We are musicians, jazz radio show hosts, and advocates for the arts.
Congratulations
to Art on the Air and its dedicated hosts, Larry Breckner and Esther Golden.
We want to thank you for this outstanding program and exceptional service to our arts community.
No better way to stay informed as to what's happening in the arts than to listen to this informative show.
Not only do we get the information, but the opportunity to listen to the thoughts of the artists themselves.
We wish you many wonderful years of success.
And as we say on the Billy Foster Jazz Zone,
don't let what you can't do stop you from doing what you can.
And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. He's a region native, and he writes, if you haven't read the Times lately, he writes a lot in the Times of Northwest Indiana, and it's taken him all around the South Shore and Northwest Indiana, and it's produced several books, Lost Hammond, Indiana, 100 Things to Try and Do in Gary, Northwest Indiana, Things to Do Before You Die, and he's got a new book out that's familiar with a lot of people, and I think you would like it. If you're from the East Chicago, Indiana Harbor area, it's called Lost, East Chicago and Indiana Harbor. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, Joseph S. Pete, and he's going to tell us all about that book and some of the other things he's got going. Welcome.
Very nice seeing you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, my new book is Lost, East Chicago and Indiana Harbor. It was written for the History Press. It's part of the Lost series, which is about kind of vanished and bygone places, different communities across the country. Locally, Jerry Davich, fellow Times columnist, wrote Lost Gary, and then I wrote Lost Hammond for the series. But they have these books in, you know, there's a Lost Milwaukee, Lost Chicago, and so on. They have them for cities, you know, all around the country. I thought East Chicago in particular has been kind of very underrepresented. Like a lot of the history in this state, it tends to either focus on the Indianapolis area, or if it's in Northwest Indiana, the story of Gary has just this very dramatic kind of rise and fall trajectory. So a lot of the local history tends to focus on that. And I feel like you have a lot of very storied communities that are very underrepresented in the pages of history books. East Chicago is definitely one of those. I feel this, there have been multiple good books that have already been written about it. Jane Amison's East Chicago, Archibald McKinley wrote Twin City and a couple other ones, but it's been well over a decade since there's been any kind of like general interest history about East Chicago. John Frere wrote a good Mexican Americans playing baseball in East Chicago book, though. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is it's such a rich layer. There's so many layers to East Chicago. It could easily be multiple different subjects, could be book length on their own. You have just a very rich history of, like, you know, machine politics, a very rich history of immigration, a very rich history of heavy industry. It really was a steelmaker to the world, like a mini arsenal of democracy. And then a very rich history of, you know, pollution and so forth. But there's all, and sports, it's the city of champions. They've had, it was the only city in the state with back-to-back undefeated high school basketball championships. And basketball is a huge, huge thing there. It was, it produced many, like, the winningest NBA coach of all time, Greg Popovich. It produced Junior Bridgman, one of the best six men of all time for the Milwaukee Bucks. And it was really a charged rivalry back when Washington and Roosevelt were playing each other. People compared it to, like, the Celtics and the Lakers. And then there's just, like, little-known bits of history that a lot of people wouldn't have realized. Like, Michael Jordan had played his first ever game in a Bulls uniform at Washington High School. I interviewed multiple people who were there that night to watch history being made. Unlike my previous book, Lost Hammond, that one kind of focused more on the general history, Hammond, and kind of like a lot of newspaper accounts and, you know, publications from the Historical Society and, other documents and so forth. This one was heavily based on interviews. I really tried to capture the feel and what it was like to grow up there, because in particular, with East Chicago generally and with Indiana Harbor in particular, it just holds such a magical nostalgia for a lot of people who grew up there, because it attracted immigrants from all over the world because of the steel mills. They had over 100 different nationalities there at one point. A lot of people just have these very romantic notions of growing up where, you know, six or seven languages were spoke on the same block. There was a different church for every ethnicity. There was all kinds of different ethnic food, the odors of which were wafting through the neighborhood as people were out grilling. People would share food. People looked out for their neighbors. Everyone was almost kind of equal because everyone's, you know, parents worked in the steel mill. But there was a sense of camaraderie and unity that people had, and a sense of that a lot of people who moved away said they haven't been able to recapture anything since, because it just filled with all these, like, compelling anecdotes about, you know, with the ethnic issues. Like, for instance, people would go to, like, a Lithuanian church where the priest spoke a different language if their sins were particularly bad that week, in the hope that they would get some leniency and things like that. But there were stories about, like, meeting someone where she was Mexican and he was Greek, and they neither spoke English, and they were trying to communicate, and they eventually ended up getting married and everything. But it kind of details, like, how that came about. But it's just based on a lot of, like, stories about the rich tapestry of going up there. There's a lot of, like, you know, stuff that people tend to romanticize, like Hot Dog John's, Taco Joe's. The Inland Steel Christmas parties are very popular. They used to have a zoo. There was the baseball stadium. There are old movie theaters like the Vogue and the Indiana Theater where people were entertained for years. But there was just, there's also components of, a lot of, like, you know, there was some crime in the city. John Dillinger's big bank robbery was there at the First National Bank downtown, an architectural treasure that was sadly raised to make way for a Walgreens. And the bullet holes were visible up until the end when it was torn down in the 2000s. But then there were some, you know, unsolved mysteries like of Jay Givens and, you know, so forth that the book kind of explores. But it just kind of tends to look back at, like, a lot of the places people have these nostalgic romantic memories for, like the Mademoiselle shops. But it also recalls some of the bit more of the offbeat history. Like, there was Jimmy the Mummy, a local funeral home had that they would let kids see for, like, a nickel back when they're far more lax regulations with that type of thing. There was a hermit that was kind of notorious, like, locally, who was kind of a figure of local lore, but it kind of explores, you know, all those things. Bolita, the big house, a lot of the industrial neighborhoods they built, like Pullman in Chicago was built by Pullman, but Chicago had its own industrial neighborhoods, Marktown and Sunnyside. Marktown designed to look like an English village, by the noted architect Howard Van Doren Shaw. And, you know, but it just really tries to capture, you know, what the place was like, what the people were like, all the city's various accomplishments on the athletic field, in terms of heavy industry, in terms of supporting the war effort, in terms of being just a magnet for immigration that brought people together from all over the world. A lot of people who grew up there thought it was a really special place, and that's what I really try to capture in the book.
Well, real quickly, in our last few moments here, tell us how people can find your book.
Oh, it's available at all local bookstores, Miles Books, Green Door Books, the press in Valpo, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million. Any of the fine retailers in Northwest Indiana that carry books will have it. The new Barnes & Noble in Cherryville should have it when it opens, but anywhere with books pretty much will have it.
Well, it's Joseph S. Pete, and he's written a new book. You can find all of his books at these locations. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing your journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
Hi, this is David Graham, Associate Artistic Director for Canterbury Summer Theater in Michigan City. And I want to congratulate Esther and Larry on the anniversary of their marvelous program, Art on the Air. Not only is the show highly entertaining as well as informative, but Esther and Larry are providing a wonderful forum to support the thriving arts community in our region. Esther and Larry, here's to many more.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
How can I be sure, in a world that's constantly changing, how can I be sure where I stand with you?
We are very pleased to welcome Felix Cavallari to Art on the Air. Felix is a legendary singer-songwriter. Making people feel good is primary to his illustrious 50-year career that includes induction into the Rock and Roll, Songwriter, Vocal Group, and Grammy Hall of Fame. The founding member of the band The Rascals, they were the backdrop for a generation with songs like Reuben, A Beautiful Morning, and People Got to Be Free, to name just a few. Felix has had and continues to have a successful and enriching career with an active tour schedule, and he has written a book titled Memoir of a Rascal, From Pelham, New York to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as a current album titled Then and Now. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Felix. It's really nice meeting you.
Aloha. Yes, and I feel the same.
Well, Felix, glad your agent reached out to us to have you on Art on the Air. And I think I told you this off air, but when I told my wife, you know, I don't always talk about my interviews. I said, oh, yeah, we're going to have that on The Rascals. And she would shut that door. So all she was right. Really excited. So she's more of a child of the 60s, but I've enjoyed your music too. But what our audience wants to know is all about you. How I put it is how you got from where you were to where you are now. And for our audience, we'll be sampling some of the originals, Young Rascals / Rascals music, and then also talk about your new album. So tell us all about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, you know, I wrote this book, and basically what I really wanted to do in the book was to kind of show people what happened to me and how it happened to me. And so basically I started off very young, about 5 years old, as a classical pianist. My mom saw some talent. She wanted me to be a classical pianist. So I started off taking literally 3 lessons a week for 8 years of my life from a music school. And I'm very thankful that I was able to do that. However, I kind of ran into a little bit of a problem because I found it to be very strict in that I was told by the teacher to write a play, the written word. So in other words, if Mr. Mozart wrote this and I did it a little differently, that was not good. So right away, I noticed that I had some sort of like a creative urge, you know. And then one day I went to junior high and at junior high, we were introduced to people from other areas of my town, which was Pelham, New York. And this fellow who was to become one of my dear friends turned around and said, "Hey, how you doing? You like rock and roll?" Now, I had never heard rock and roll. I had no idea what rock and roll is, but I said yes, because, hey, man, I want to be part of this. Went home, had a little tiny radio, turned on Alan Freed. And for those who don't know, Alan Freed brought rock and roll from Cleveland, which is where the Hall of Fame is, by the way, to New York City, where I happen to live very close. Turned this thing on, and I heard people like Ray Charles, like Jerry Lee Lewis, like Fats Domino, playing the same instrument that I was playing, but not like I was playing it. And I said, "Man, what is this?" And it really changed my life. So that was the beginning of saying, "What? Wow, look at this." And I enjoyed it, obviously enjoyed it. I really liked it. So I got to learn this. All right, so now I continue the story. If you don't mind a long answer.
No, we love it.
That's what we want.
I went to Syracuse University for pre-med. You know, my dad, everybody in my family were in the medical field. So I went, followed suit, started a band up in college, you know, working on Friday, Saturday night. One of the people in the band had a contact in what was called the Catskill Mountains. Now, for those who are not familiar with the Catskill Mountains, that was a place in upstate New York where everybody went for the summer. It was a series of hotels that were just so much fun. They would have talent come in, like comedians, like bands, like all kinds of music, all kinds of magic. And so we were the house band. All right, so just to show how things happen, one of the bands that came in was called Joey D and the Starlighters. They had this big hit in the 60s, early 60s, called The Peppermint Twist. All right. So to make a story long but still interesting, they went off to Europe, and their organist quit. He had just recently gotten married. They called me up just before the next semester was to start. Said, "Would you like to join us in Europe as our organist?" Well, I asked my dad. I said, "Dad, what do you think?" He said, "Well, I don't know, man, but why not? Give it a try. Go ahead." You know, which I'll always appreciate. That was very nice.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. So I got in an airplane. I flew to Frankfurt, Germany, and we went to this club. And Joey had an opening act. And I walked into the nightclub. It was a fairly large night. And I heard screaming, hollering, hysteria. So what's going on? "Oh, that's the Beatles." I said, "What are you talking about?" "Well, there's this group opening up for Joey's called the Beatles." I said, now they had not come to the United States yet. This is a long time ago. So here I am. I'm about what, 19, 18? I don't know what I was, but I was like, "What the heck is this?" You know? And I said, "Wow." You know, I said, "These guys, first of all, they look like they're having a blast. Number two, I could do that." You know, I didn't know there were two and maybe three of the best songwriters that ever lived. We didn't know that at the time. You know, we're supermen. And I said, "That, wow, I think I could do this." That's how it started.
That's
amazing.
Boy, talk about being in the right place at the right time.
And with no idea, as I say, a month or two prior to that, that this was going to be any type of a path for me or a career. I was going to do, you know, my doctor thing or whatever. That's one of the reasons I say I wrote the book, so that, you know, people who, you know, maybe going to school, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the power up above has got in store for you. But if you go with an open mind and an open heart, good things can happen.
You wind up having Jimi Hendrix be your opening act. I mean,
well, yeah, I do.
A whole different universe.
Well, we got to know him pretty well. You know, he was, you know, in those days, the business was a lot smaller than it is now. You know, there was not like 80 million people like trying to make a record, and they could do it now in their home, you know?
Right. So right. There weren't the entourages that they were now. Everybody was much more accessible.
Yeah, it was very, very different. And in some ways it was better. And of course, in some ways it's really worse now because it's pretty crazy right now, I must add.
So how did this develop in going on? How did it come together to become, well, at the time, the Young Rascals from where you're at that point?
This happened. I mean, like I said, I continued with Joey for a while. Now, since I had left school, you know, I was now eligible for the wonderful thing called the draft. See, that was a major event in our lives in those years. Because, I mean, obviously, what's the point of starting something if you're going to get drafted and pulled away, you know? So I had to wait for that. So I took a job again in a club which Joey D owned. And three of those members in the house band were to become Rascals. So, as I say, to shorten the biography, when the United States Army said, I don't think you're good for this, we'll call you, you know, I started the band. Now, the drummer at that time, he didn't want to go with us, you know. So I had the good fortune, again, the divine intervention of a lady who I was seeing who introduced me to Dino Danelli, who has recently passed, but was just a magnificent showman and drummer. So the group was intact at that point. And now let's go to work, you know? So we went to work. And, you know, as I say, this is all in the book. So if you want to read it and have a, you know, this is a synopsis, but it just kept going from there and growing from there. We got a job, we had a job out in the island, a place called The Barge, which is kind of where we were discovered because it was the Hamptons. And the Hamptons is where everyone goes who can afford the Hamptons in the summer. And we were there in the summer. We met our manager there, Sid Bernstein, who basically brought the Beatles, again, that connection, to the United States twice, the first two trips. So we had a deal within 6 months with Atlantic Records.
Wow.
When something's supposed to happen, it happens, you know? And if you just stay out of the way, it'll happen. I mean, and I really believe that, you know?
Oh, completely. Because at that junction, I mean, what would have happened if your father had said, no, you've got to stick with med, this music stuff, you know? But...
Well, he wasn't too, I mean, when he explained to me, you know, which really stuck was like, look, you know, here's the deal. You know, when I graduate and I get my degree and then I go out and do my training and then I get my certification, I put a shingle in front of my office. I'm a doctor my whole life. But you better keep making hit records, buddy, or you're gone. And, you know, he's right. He was right. Because, you know, a lot of people that I know, good friends of mine, they're what they call one-hit wonders.
Right.
Now you're in your early 20s and you just had it. Now what do you do? Well, you better have an education or you better have a really good idea because it ain't easy, you know. And so we got very lucky. And I'm very, very, very blessed and very happy to, you know, be here talking to you all about a career.
Well, early in the Young Rascals songbook is one song which I think everyone recognizes, like 67 Groovin'. Tell us briefly about that, and let's take a listen to it as you tell us about it.
Well, every song has a story, you know. I had a story about that, basically, which I do on stage, and I say, like, you know, musicians like this band you see right here, we work on Friday and Saturday. I have yet to find a female who thinks that's a nice idea. So, if you want to have a good relationship, write a song.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to Groovin' from 1967 by the Young Rascals.
Groovin' on a Sunday afternoon. Really couldn't get away too soon. Avenue to it in thing we like to do. There's always lots of things that we can see. We can be anyone we like to be. And all those happy people we could meet just grooving on a Sunday afternoon. Get away too soon. No, 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 no. We'll keep on spending sunny days this way. We're gonna talk and laugh our time away. I feel it coming. Day by day, life would be ecstasy. You and me endlessly grooving on a Sunday afternoon. Really couldn't get away too soon. No, 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 no.
And that's the Young Rascals grooving, Felix Cavallari. That brings back memories for me, I'll tell you that, even though
it's it's a mighty powerful skill to have, being able to write a song.
The idea that you have Sunday to spend with the ones you love, family or girlfriend or et cetera, that kind of inspired the lyrical part of that song. And then the music part of it, well, you know, New York City at that time and still had a huge Latin community. You know, so I kind of was infused with that beat, you know, and that groove, you know.
And so you're starting to have some early hits. Tell us about that, Neil. I know 60s touring was quite a bit different than it is now.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes. Many times we followed the circus, you know. You know, the venues have changed. I mean, obviously, it's a very sophisticated world right now out there. And, of course, there was no such thing as, you know, really video. Interesting thing about those years to me was it was not only like a musical revolution, but it was like a technological revolution in its day. Like, for example, as we started progressing from clubs to, you know, basically amphitheaters or, you know, arenas, there was a problem with the sound. Now, if you remember looking at the early Kinks and Beatles and Stones, they used to use guitar amps for their PA system.
Right.
So all of a sudden, this group of people would come along. Now, this is at the 60s, and they said, hey, we're starting a company. We would like to offer our services at your next concert so you can see whether you like what we do. That's one of the major organizations in our business right now. It's called the Clare Brothers. And they outfitted all of the sound, you know, for the stage. All those things were happening then. And so it was really exciting. But yeah, we worked at basketball courts. We worked in places that, as I said earlier, you know, had to clean up because the circus was the first. Oh yeah, but you know, it was exciting. You know, I mean, it was an excitement too. Of course, you're young and you got, you know, three partners there, and you know, you're just, you know, young and enthusiastic, and it's happening. So it was fun. And if I use that word too much, tell me.
Uh-huh. So what was the dynamic between all of you, and how does the songwriting transpire? And, you know, because that's such an interesting dynamic.
You learn lessons in life, obviously, as you get older. You know, you realize that communism doesn't work. That's the first thing you learn. See, I started a band with what was the equivalent of four alpha beings. We were all, with the exception of Eddie, who was a little young, we were all leaders of our bands at one time. So we were all like, you know, really the one that they used to look at and pay attention to times three, times four.
Yeah.
Well, difficult to govern a group like that. Now, here's where, you know, sometimes you have good luck, sometimes you have bad luck, sometimes you have medium luck. This is where your manager comes in. Because a manager is kind of like a overseer, like a foreman, like a father figure.
A referee.
He or she has to govern. Otherwise, chaos. And I think if you look at the books that are written by, you know, for example, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Three Dog Night, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's chaotic. And, you know, it was way too much for one of us to handle. We needed outside help. Unfortunately, the outside help wasn't really there. And I could just, you know, capsulize it by saying that it was at one time, but then it wasn't. You know, that's so important. The difference in this, and I find this, you know, as just as my opinions, of course, you know, they should be not blamed on the network, you know, but I feel that the English groups are a lot more intelligent about the way they fight than the American groups. They stay together. They say, look, I can't stand the side of you, but let's stay together and make $1 million a day. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot more, I believe, kind of understanding about, like, this is what we do for a living. It ain't perfect. Very interesting, because, as I say, when you break up for no reason, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, bands and families, it's just, yeah. It
oh, well,
just
nowadays,
spark.
Nowadays it's absurd, you know.
Well, we all want to start our day with a beautiful morning, and that song has held true, you know, all these decades. It's such a beautiful song. Could we sort of hear the story on that, please?
Well, again, you know, basically you're standing on Oahu. You just came off of a big hit record. You're madly in love with a beautiful lady. The sun is shining. And you say, got to write a song. Now, how could you not feel that in those beautiful atmosphere? You know, I remember vividly, you know, like looking out and saying, sure is nice here.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and take a journey back to, 1968 with Beautiful Morning. And as I think at this time, still the Young Rascals.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and just smile. Just taking some clean, fresh air for me.
No sense in staying inside.
If the weather's fine and you got the time, it's your chance to wake up and plan another brand new.
Morning, Felix Cavallari and the Young Rascals, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Wow, that's along with Groovin', those early songs are just, you just want to kick back and relax. They just kind of take you on this, you know, I think one of the things that's missing a lot in modern songwriting is it takes you on a journey, a story, a feeling. And a lot of pop music is kind of shouting into the mic.
Well, and you and the Rascals are so beloved in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Well, which was really a stroke of luck. You know, there's a lot of reasons for that. And two of the big reasons were the people that brought us there, Tom Moffat, rest his soul, and a guy by the name of The Beard. This was a disc jockey and a radio station owner, promoter. And they saw something in the Rascals that could transcend some of the, you know, the idiosyncrasies of the Islanders. I mean, they like R&B, but they like R&B done by guys like the Rascals. You know, simplification of that. It worked out perfectly. So here we get to the islands, and all of a sudden, we're like really, really popular. We're really famous. It was a magical, magical thing, because my dad, you know, he was a dentist, but he was also at Pearl Harbor, not during the bombing, of course, but he was there for many years. So when I took him out there, you know, he's like, my God, it was one hotel here when I was here. I should have bought some land. Yeah, we all know that story, right? Yeah. It was magical.
Tell us the transition from the Young Rascals to the now Rascals, how that happened. Because I know there's been various permutations of the group over the years, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it started real early, just as you mentioned, our song Good Lovin'. It came out. Just as that was coming out, we got a phone call from our manager, who had received a legal note from a group called the Harmonica Rascals concerning the name. We own the name, the Rascals. You guys can't use it. So unfortunately, without asking what we should name our child, he named us the Young Rascals. We were a little upset about that, because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we should be able to choose our own name, you know? And see, again, I've said this so many times, but there was a guy, people used to come up to us and say, did that dog really have a circle around his eye, or did they paint that on, you know? See, because it was a connotation of the young, the little rascals that we never were able to overcome, you know? And so as soon as we got a chance to, you know, kind of declare our manhood, we changed it to the Rascals.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you also haven't recorded for a while, but you now have a new album, and that you come out with some new music on it. Tell us a little about that. That's, I think, Then and Now is your new album.
Yeah, basically, during the wonderful COVID period that we all went through, we were kind of locked up. And as I said earlier, about one of the magics of technology is that we can do music out of our home. So we came up with this concept of let's take five songs that influenced me or influenced us. Let's re-record them. And then let's write five new songs to show that type of, like, you know, influence. And so that's what this is about, Then and Now. So we took artists like Benny King and, you know, and Ray Charles, and, you know, like some of the songs that you're going to be hearing, like Clarence Carter, who I don't know if people know, but he had this great record called Slip Away. And it was just, again, I'm using the word, it was a blast, because we were making music while we were locked up. We were able to communicate with each other. We kind of kept the spirit, you know, we kept our chops, our throat, and our hands. And it came out really well.
Oh, my gosh. You know, on the cover that you did, Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher, your vocal gymnastics on that were just wow.
Now, I'll tell you, trying to follow Jackie Wilson is not the easiest thing in the world. Wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but thank you. Yeah.
Let's take a listen to From Then and Now. I think this is Slip Away. Tell us just briefly about that, and we'll take a quick listen to Slip Away.
Well, as I say, this is a song. I remember vividly, I was on Atlantic Records, and this fellow who was working there brought this song that was kind of like obscure, because it came from down south here. It's called Slip Away. And I loved it then, and I still love it.
Okay, let's take a listen to it. The Rascals, Felix Cavalieri, on the new album, Then and Now, Slip Away.
What? would I give for just a few moments? What would I give just to have you near? Well, tell me you will try to slip away somehow. Right now, can you slip away? Slip away, slip away. Oh, I need you so. Wrong, the things I ask you to do, but please believe me, darling, I don't mean to hurt you. Can you slip away without him knowing you're gone? And maybe we can meet somewhere, somewhere we're both unknown. Can you slip away? Slip away. Slip away. Oh, I need you, darling. Can you slip away? So slip away. Just slip away, darling. And maybe we can meet somewhere without him knowing that you're gone.
And from the Them and Now album, that's Felix Cavallari and the Rascals, Slip Away, on their new album that was released. That was just this year in 2024, correct?
I lose track. I think so. 2020, yeah, either the end of last year or the beginning of this year, yes.
It's such a smooth song. I just, you know, what would I give for a few moments? I mean, just beautiful song.
Yeah, they had good songs in those days. You know, they stood the test of time. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Larry, about the, you know, the new songs that are out there now. It's very, very different. Very different. And, you know, I kind of try to keep up. And it's not easy to keep up with what the heck you're doing out there. I mean, like, I listened to the Top of the Pops the other day from Britain. You listen to some of these songs. It's very, very, very strange what's going on out there.
I know. Yeah, I agree with you. It's pop music has become so, it's so different now. I like one of the terms I came across about you guys being like the blue-eyed soul band. It's one of the descriptions. And I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because, like, you know, I've been living here in Tennessee for 20 years, 25 years. But no one knows, no one thinks that I come from Tennessee. So as soon as I start talking, they say, oh, you're from New York, right? Well, it's the same thing with music, you know, like we would do songs that we really thought we were sounding like the Beatles, but we weren't. There's something inherent in our DNA that makes us like a little soulful, you know, and obviously I'm proud of that. I nurture that, but it's not something that you think of and create. It's something that's innate in your style.
You know, I want to ask you about the album covers. What was your input in your album covers, especially things like The Island of Real and Peaceful World?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I'm glad you asked that because, yes, it was my four alpha guys around me. You know, we had to control. Wow, hey, Mr. Denali, the drummer, turned out to be a heck of an artist. Dino really took it upon himself. And I say this because he was really not a well-educated guy from the normal, you know, education schools, etc. He educated himself in art, and he became really, really good. So his province were the album covers.
Oh, they were really nice.
And it kept him quiet. Really good at it. I mean, I respect so much somebody self-taught about anything. And he became, like he went through all the different periods and learned and did. And I will always respect him for that.
Well, then you, you all divided up whatever you're going to do. Give him that creative piece, and you guys had the other creative piece. One question I have, because I know technology's changed from the 60s to now in terms of, you know, we talked about you can actually produce a really decent recording from your home. But tell us about that, how, and also the studio system. You don't really need a studio per se anymore for distribution.
Oh, you mean like to get the product out?
Well, two questions. The technology of it, you know, you having to go to a studio, now you could actually produce it from your home. And then also getting the product out. You can become almost self-produced and just find a distributor.
You know, I mean, it's a long answer to that question. I'll try to figure. You see these things right here, these guys?
Right.
See?
Yeah.
Changed the world. Now tell me, if I have two speakers, how the hell is it going to sound as good as this?
Right.
I mean, how could you do it? So, in other words, what has been done is the sound, which is now digital, has changed so much that how could you compare a home studio to a multi-million-dollar recording studio? You can't. It's as simple as that. You know, like when you go to a studio that's made, that's soundproofed, that's got, like, as I say, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of just gear, equipment, microphones, stuff like that, there's no comparison, you know. However, because it's gone down to this level, which is okay, it's good, sounds good, you know, it's been squashed, it's been squeezed, it's been changed. People are now used to this, see?
Right.
But you don't want to try to do strings in your house because it ain't going to work. You know? So, I mean, basically, it has another thing too. For example, like if you listen to old records, you can hear so many mistakes. You can hear so many things that were, there's no mistakes anymore on records. Records are perfect now. They're so perfect now. I mean, like I could talk for hours about this.
But yeah, I like the mistakes.
Is,
but
we're used to.
Right.
So anything that's not perfect is like, isn't that quaint? Oh yeah. I mean, listen to Rolling Stones. Oh my God. I mean, like seriously, you know, tempos don't change anymore because we need to sync the voice to the, to the MTV or to, you know, the video, but it's totally different. But no, I'm never going to say that a home studio will compare in any way to a professional recording studio, which it doesn't.
I have that conversation with people about their camera phones. I do photography also.
Oh, there you go.
And they are tremendous and they're great. But I said, once you blow those suckers up to like what I do for gallery size, it's a whole different story. It's not quite the same thing. So, and I agree with you.
I started off like, you know, basically really enjoying photography. And, you know, now I'm saying like, wow. I mean, these are good. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. But they're not the real deal.
And you're listening to our guest today, Felix Cavallari of The Rascals on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Well, we need to do Get Out of Home. That's the other selection from your new album. Tell us briefly about that, and we'll take a quick listen to it.
Get on Home. Oh, well, you know, one of the guys I wrote with there, you know, he's kind of like a country artist, you know, and he came up with this thing, Get on Home. And it was so interesting because, first of all, I enjoyed thoroughly writing with him. We would do demos before we record it, you know. And his demo sounded like this a little bit, you know. And my demo sounded like that.
Well, let's take a listen to Get On Home from The Rascals, Felix Cavallari.
The sun is rising over these Tennessee hills. Coffee smelling so fine. As I watch you getting ready to go,
can't help but wonder what's on your mind. Flight 1203, straight to New York City. You ought to be there around 10. You better believe I'll be counting down the days till your plane lands back here again. Get on home, I'll be waiting right here. Don't you go having too much fun up there. Manhattan nights and the bright lights ain't no friend of mine. So get on home, back to our little. What would I do if I lost you, girl? I'm leaving every house light on. Just get on home. Get on home. You said you needed a little space and time. I'm not sure that I agree. 900 miles, that's a long, long time. Might as well be a million years to me. Get on home, I'll be waiting right here. Don't you go having too much fun up there. Manhattan nights and the bright lights ain't no friend of mine. What would I do if I lost you, girl? Leaving every house light on. So get on home. I don't know who was right or wrong. That don't matter right now.
And that was Felix Cavalieri's The Rascals' Get On Home on the new
album.
Yeah,
don't you go having too much fun.
Right. From the Then and Now album. So, well, we only have a couple more minutes left here, Felix, but what do you have coming up down the road in the future here?
Well, we do a lot of cruises. We do like cruises like the Flower Power Cruise, which is a group of maniacs that get on board a ship for 8 days and listen to music and have great food. And we also, I just started doing some symphony work, which I'm really proud of. I'm really happy to kind of go back to square one in that my music is done by an orchestra and the band. So I'm trying to nurture both of those things. And, you know, I'm just trying to keep busy and, you know, I'm just trying to keep the creative music flowing so that, you know, I can kind of like just enjoy what I do till I can't do it anymore.
Well, we hope you do it for a long time.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and that we got connected for you to come on our show and sharing your brand new album, Then and Now, which has been available for a while. And on tour, you can look you up. And obviously, you just do a Google search on The Rascals and these rascals will appear. Felix, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your arts and music journey.
Esther, yeah. Pleasure meeting you. Hope I see you again in person.
In person.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
No, thank you for all the beautiful music.
Thank you.
Thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.